Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway, and this is part two of our review of Rita's new book entitled Restoring America's Soul. Before we go any further, though, and especially for those who may have missed our program last week, I want to give a little background on Rita and her qualifications for writing this book. First of all, she is a constitutional attorney with honors degrees from West Virginia University and from the Washington and Lee University School of Law. She's currently serving as the National Legislative Strategist for the Convention of States Project. In addition, she has worked for the nationally respected Alliance Defending Freedom and as advisor to the Virginia Christian Alliance and to our own Valley Family Forum, not to mention her work here as co-host of our Crossroads program. Finally, she is a nationally syndicated columnist who has been published in numerous media, including The Stream, WorldNet Daily, and The Blaze, in addition to a great column that appears every Saturday in the Daily News Record. And above all else, however, and in her own words, she is most committed to her young family as a wife and as a mother. Rita, we could say much more, but let's get back to your book. By way of review, we talked last week about your reasons for writing it, focused primarily on what it means to be a conservative, about your own passion for communicating a positive message of goodness, truth, beauty, and virtue, and about how to do that more effectively in our culture and to our government. So now, Rita, just tell us what to look forward to in Chapter 1, particularly to your view of what it means to be a conservative.
Thanks, Dean. I see a conservative as someone who believes that the best governing happens closest to home, that individual responsibility and private initiative are really the backbone of American prosperity, that strong families make a strong society, that parents are the primary and best nurturers and educators of children, and that religious freedom is the most precious of all individual liberties. How's that for a summary?
Well, I'll tell you this, Rita. I can identify that, and I think I can proudly carry that banner of being a conservative. There have been times that I was a little hesitant, given some of the things that were happening.
I think you qualify, Dean, as a conservative, for sure.
You made my day.
Oh, good.
Would you describe yourself in that same way?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, but you also, Rita, describe your own discomfort, and I just describe my own, with how some conservatives think of what that label means, as well as the way that the media and non-conservatives describe the movement. So tell us about that level of discomfort.
Well, I mentioned this briefly last week because it was actually one of the reasons I started down the path that led to this book, but I do think it bears repeating. I talk about this conversation I had. It was just a one-on-one personal conversation with someone who's actually a prominent Republican. I would say he's a conservative leader. And in the conversation, he made the comment, conservatives are people who don't like change. And that really sort of ruffled my feathers over time, not in the moment. But as I reflected more and more about it, first there was this sense of dissonance that I had. Well, that's not how I think of myself. I would never describe myself as a person who doesn't like change. It depends on what the change is. There's positive change. There's change that takes us toward goodness, truth, and beauty. And then there's negative change that takes us away from it. So I would say, especially as a conservative in America right now, we are people who like change. We want change, and we need to advocate for change because in so many ways, we are not on the right path right now. I see a lot of problems, practical problems, with having that idea of conservatives or people who don't like change, particularly when we think about how it affects younger people. I think it really keeps younger generations from even digging in to understand the conservative worldview because they think of us as people who are stuck in the past, and that sounds like a negative thing. So it's problematic. And the public perception of conservatives, I think, in general, is very consistent with that whole idea of stuck in the past. You know, it's all about tradition. We're opposed to change and progress. And we just want to be left alone. The Republicans are referred to as the party of no, that sort of thing.
I can identify with this individual who says conservatives don't like change. And I think you've sort of gone into that yourself. But we don't like change when it undermines or throws overboard those unchangeable values and principles on which America was founded and has prospered.
That's right. But the flip side of that is that we do like change if it's change directed back toward those underlying values and principles.
Right. Again, but just to continue that thought, there are times when we do have to say no to a lot of the extreme ideas that are coming today from the so-called progressives, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
So again, did you want to add any more to that, the inspiration, the young people?
Yeah, just to reiterate, I think that's the biggest problem that we face with that public perception is that we're not inspiring younger people who want to be inspired. They want to have something to fight for. They want to have a cause to get behind. And if we call ourselves the people who don't like change, there's not a lot there to really sink your teeth into. The other problem, I think, with this whole perception of conservatives or people who don't like change, people stuck in the past, is that I think it has led, in particular with Christians, it has led a lot of us to just sort of turn inward and to retreat from involvement in government, involvement in public policy, even in engagement with the culture. And that's a problem because as Christians, we're called to be salt and light. We're called to love our neighbors, and caring for our culture, tending our government are important ways that we have to love our neighbors.
Well, we've touched on this a little bit already, Rita, but why do you think it is that even conservatives have come to see themselves as people who don't like change?
I can see why, with the conservative worldview, there's sort of a natural tendency in that direction if we're not careful, because there's a really fine line between advocating for limited government, which again is a core conservative principle, but advocating for limited government is a little bit different from opposing government programs. But it's such a fine line there. We can be opposed to certain government programs because they are unconstitutional or they don't work. And so then there's this tendency for us to just be opponents, people who resist, people who are against government, people who think government is bad. So we just have to be really careful with that.
Just to conclude this then, in the book, you propose a better way to define conservative. So we see what they should not be. What should we be?
The description or definition that I like the most is one that I actually found, oddly enough, as I was reading a biography of President Truman. It wasn't Truman himself, but it was someone in his administration that says, a conservative, in the truest sense of the word, is a conserver of the things we hope to keep. And I thought, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that a positive and really accurate description? A conservative is someone who is working to conserve the things in our government, the aspects of our government, and the aspects of our culture that are worthy of being kept because they are good. They're based on sound principles. They're moving us toward virtue. So really conserving what is good and true and beautiful. And I know this may seem like a slight shift. People may be thinking, well, isn't this really just semantics? But it changes our stance from telling others what we're against to telling people what we're for.
Well, Rita, you tell a story in your book to illustrate this idea about the importance of telling things what we're for instead of just what we're against. Could you share that with us?
Well, I'm going to turn that one back on you, Dean, because you know that you were actually part of that story. So why don't you lay the groundwork for us?
Well, just briefly, Rita, and some of our listeners may remember this. This took place nearly 8 years ago in the fall of 2011. There was a group called the Shenandoah Gay and Lesbian Association that worked with a large Merck plant near Elkton to sponsor what was called the Elkton Pride Day. But everybody knew that what they really meant was the Elkton Gay Pride Day. And many members of the community objected strongly to both the name and the nature of the event because it implied that the town of Elkton was one of the sponsors, which it was not. Another reason for their opposition was that they were personally opposed to the homosexual lifestyle and they didn't want to glorify it. Now, that even included some Merck employees who were reluctant to speak out for fear of retribution. However, one of the town pastors did speak out very publicly against the event, went on Facebook, thousands of hits, and called on Merck to cancel the event. He also then contacted us for help, which led to our meeting with the plant manager to express our concerns. And you can pick it up from there.
Well, I remember the group of us that went, which included you, Dean. We all went to this meeting with the Merck executive with the best of intentions. I think, as I remember it, we did a good job of expressing our concerns about why we didn't think the event was appropriate. We helped them to understand that there were Merck employees who felt so conflicted over it but were afraid to voice their concerns because they thought it might affect their job. But if you remember, Dean, at some point in that meeting, the Merck executive said, "You keep telling me what you don't want. Why don't you tell me what you do want? I'll never forget it." I remember where I was sitting. I remember the expression on his face. I'll never forget it. It was a great question. And looking back now, I have to say that I personally wasn't as prepared as I should have been to answer that question.
Then in hindsight, what do you wish you had said?
I've thought about that a lot, Dean. I wish that we had proposed, and we may have done eventually, I don't recall, but I wish I had been prepared and had thought about that in advance so I could have said on the spot, you know, why doesn't the company do an event to celebrate virtue, a celebration of community service or military service or parenting or the family, you know, to shift the focus from people's sexual behavior, which isn't really something that warrants celebration, and instead focus on what people do to make their community and their workplace and their families and their nation better.
Well, Rita, I'm going to speak very frankly to you right
now. Okay.
I think you're being too hard on yourself.
Aww.
And I remember it this way. First of all, he gave us a very respectful audience. He gave us all
yes.
the time we needed. And with regard to the outcome, if I recall correctly, he asked us if we would like, or we may have suggested,
uh-huh.
would we like to participate in the event, at
yeah.
least to attend the event?
Yes.
And he said, yes, I will talk to the organizers. And he came back and said they'd be glad to have us.
Yes.
That was a real achievement, a positive achievement. Secondly, when we told him about the box that some of the employees were in who opposed the event, we asked if he could make sure that they had equal access to the company email network. He said he would look into that as well. So actually, I think we did achieve some positive results.
I absolutely agree. And I remember very well our attending the event.
Yes.
We had some stickers made up that
yes.
said something like peace or hope, love, truth.
Yes.
A positive message. And so that whole experience for me was really valuable. And the opportunity to be at the event was valuable because it forced us to think through what is our positive message, our positive appeal to this group of people. So I think it ended for the best.
It did. It was a great experience for all of us. Mm-hmm. Well, then you point out in your book that there's an almost built-in tendency, unless we're intentional about it, for conservatives to come across as being negative, while liberals, quote unquote, come across as being positive. Explain that for us and why it's so important.
Yeah, well, this goes back to the conservative worldview about government having a limited role in people's lives, or limited jurisdiction, if you will, in society. So we're naturally opposed to many of these big government programs for that reason, because we think the government is not the right answer to every problem in society. And so I can understand why we would come under that label of the party of no. On the other hand, look at the left. They want big government. They want all these programs. So they are always advocating for the next government program in order to reach their goal of creating this utopian society that they imagine. So it really sets up a contrast of the left coming across as caring about people, wanting to make the world a better place, while we tend to come across, if we're not really careful, as just wanting to be left alone.
Well, it's interesting how you describe the left approach, wanting that utopian society. I think it's, this is a personal opinion here, but it's one that I practice pretty regularly. I think progressive is the wrong word. I think it's regressive.
Uh-huh.
It's really taking us back to a world we don't want to go to, where government is in control of every part of our lives. So how do we deal with that?
Well, I think the key lies in our doing a better job of imparting a vision of society that doesn't just avoid talking about how our society can be better. So we have to talk about how limited government actually does help society, how limited government provides the right conditions for private organizations, churches, families, and individuals to really thrive in meeting the needs of people. We have to show them the positive in limited government, not just the negative
and
side of it.
And that is a bigger challenge today than we have ever had in our history.
Yes.
With the extreme ideas that are being put forward by some elements of the Democratic Party.
Well, we're going to be talking about that in the weeks to come.
Well, how do you see the conservative movement responding to this characterization of conservatives as being opposed to everything? I think at some point you mentioned that for some people, the GOP doesn't stand for the grand old party so much as the grumpy old people.
Yes. I think frustration is a primary tendency for conservatives. We know that we do have a positive vision, and we understand that. But when our message doesn't seem to be getting through, we become frustrated because people can't see it. I think sometimes we just sort of clam up and ultimately do an even worse job at imparting a vision that people can really rally behind and support because we're so afraid of being misunderstood and mischaracterized. And then finally, when I'm looking at the conservative movement in general, I think there's this tendency toward bitterness. And I think we saw some of this in the 2016 presidential election season. And, you know, that's just the result of frustration building over years that, you know, we don't understand how other people just don't seem to get our worldview.
Rita, I would like to mention here our own experience with some of the issues that we have had to deal with in our community. If you remember the campaign against the SOBs in our community, I think some of our listeners may know what an SOB stands for, but don't say it out loud. But we mean by that sexually oriented businesses.
Right.
And we didn't go banging against pornography. What we did do, and our city council was very helpful, what we did do is to say, this is harmful to our communities. We want to protect our families. Will you help us? It was a positive thrust to point the picture of what is happening and how we can make it better. And I think the marriage amendment in 2016 was the same way. We weren't bashing homosexuals. We were saying God has designed marriage for one man and one woman, a very positive appeal. And we won that referendum in the state.
Both campaigns were successful.
Yes.
Because we went out boldly proclaiming a beautiful, positive vision that people could support and get behind.
And the theme on our banner, some groups will say defend faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's fine. Our banner says promote faith, family, and freedom, always taking that positive approach.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Okay, well, a little advertisement for the Valley Family Forum, I guess. You mentioned that in another way that some publicans respond, which is just to shift toward the middle of the political spectrum, and in so doing, they effectively abandon some conservative policy positions. And as an example of that, you talk about the Indiana Religious Freedom Restoration Act that got a lot of national attention back in 2015. I'll just, for our listeners, give a little background for that, and then you can comment. But at that time, the Indiana legislature had passed a law that reaffirmed a federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act that had been passed in 1993. It didn't appear to be controversial. 21 other states had passed similar laws, and then, of course, Governor Mike Pence signed it into law. What happened was totally unexpected. The culture had changed since 1993 under pressure from LGBT activists who were demanding special protection for themselves. And so the Indiana law was met by an unexpected storm of protest, including threats from large corporations, athletic associations, Hollywood entertainers, that they were going to boycott Indiana if they didn't fix that law. As a result, Indiana passed an amendment, again signed by Governor Pence several months later, that was intended to protect LGBT individuals from discrimination. But in the process, it left the door open for LGBT bullies to continue to attack the very same people of faith that the original law was meant to protect. So, as a result, the threats to boycott ended, but it left the impression that conservatives will buckle under pressure and compromise their very principles, leaving a picture of weakness. So what was the problem that you saw in the way that that was handled?
Well, I think you laid the groundwork well and you described it very well. It's hard to look at it any other way as buckling under pressure. And the shame of it is, this was such a missed opportunity for conservatives and, you know, Governor Pence in particular, which, by the way, I have a lot of respect and admiration for Governor Pence. I don't mean to just throw him under the bus, but it was a missed opportunity to make the positive case for religious liberty and how it benefits everyone. I wish that we could have done a better job educating the people about what the law really would have done, because there was so much misinformation put out there about the intention of the law and how the law would actually work, because all it would have done would have been to require a balancing of interests. When one person's religious liberty butted up against another interest of another person, it would have very reasonably required that those interests be balanced, and so that people would be protected from coercion to violate their faith. It's, you know, it wasn't anything crazy. It was very reasonable. It's what we do all the time in other contexts with religious freedom cases. So this was a positive law, and by backing down from it, we actually reinforced the impression that the left managed to create that we were conceding that it was a bad law. So, you know, the left is over here saying, see, they hate gay people. They just want to discriminate against us. That's the whole reason for this law. And by backing down, we gave credence to their argument. instead of explaining, we're not interested in discriminating. We're interested in protecting the religious liberty of all Americans because this is a foundational value of our country.
What you're saying is we just need to stand true on our principles and explain them
exactly,
carefully, clearly, positively, so that we can move the needle in the culture to a greater understanding of what we are all about. And I want to just expand, Rita. I said the ground had shifted so dramatically since the federal law was passed in 1993. That law passed unanimously in the Senate at that time, and it was sponsored by Kennedy, Senator Ted Kennedy at that time.
That's amazing.
It passed almost unanimously in the House, only three objections. That law was sponsored by Charles Schumer, currently the leader of the Democrats in the Senate. That's how much the ground has shifted. Unanimous support then and bullied into concessions later, just 25 years later.
Well, and I just want to reinforce how much damage we do to ourselves and our credibility when we see that our position is mischaracterized. We see that we are being painted out as people who are hateful and negative, you know, and want to hurt other people. When we just simply concede in the face of that, we are absolutely reinforcing that. We are helping to create this negative picture of us, and we cannot afford to do that. Not only, you know, because of political reasons, but because as Christians, we are ambassadors for Christ, and we cannot stand by and just allow people to paint us in that way without correcting that picture.
Well, Rita, I think that pretty well wraps it up for us. And looking down the road, Rita, I understand that toward the end of your book, you give chapters dealing specifically with strategies for putting the government back. So this is a time, Rita, let us know how we can buy a copy of your book.
Well, the best way to get it quickly right now is go to my website. It's RitaMDunaway.com. You won't have to pay any more for it. You will have to pay for shipping, but you'll get it quicker. You can also order it on Amazon, but it might take you a little bit longer to get it.
Well, Rita, that concludes this. I just hope everybody can go ahead and get a copy of your book. Follow along with us in the next couple of weeks as we continue this series on your book, Restoring America's Soul. Well, this brings us to a close, Rita. Thank you so much for sharing this assessment of the conservative movement in America. And as a reminder, again, she is the author of Restoring America's Soul. Get your copy. Again, Rita, the website is
RitaMDunaway.com.
All right, Rita's going to be back with us again next week for part three of this series to suggest more effective ways to communicate our values to a culture that is often hostile to them. If you'd like to listen to this program again, share it with your friends, go to valleyfamilyforum.org, click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our generous sponsors of Blue Ridge Chimney Services, the dental practice of Scott Dunaway, and a new sponsor, Blessings Christian Bookstore, located at 313 Neff Avenue here in Harrisonburg. Let them know that you appreciate their support of our Crossroads programs and let them help you with your needs. We also thank so many of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads, P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway, engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rejoice, 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 rej